very cute boy, glasses and Converse, and I'm like, oh hi, oh hi.
All of Julia's favorite things.
Well, I mean, clearly, but you know, when you have the cute dorky guy with glasses, you're like, oh sir, you're just zombie fodder. But I will ogle you until then. Horror Movie Survival Guide is a weekly podcast where I, Gorehound Julia Marchesi, delves into my horror movie notebook to corrupt another one of my longtime chums, Terry Gamble, who is hiding in the creepy horror closet.
My mission is to learn the gospel of horror movie survival and to incorporate Julia's wealth of wisdom to become a final girl disciple.
Join us as we take a deep dive into everything from OG horror
to newly released films,
but prefer the classics on VHS.
We'll talk about obscure details that no one else notices.
Spin off into alternate casting universes, crush on some dodgy, foxy fellows,
and creepy uncles, and arm ourselves with the knowledge necessary to become the final girl.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Horror Movie Survival Guide. I am Julia.
Oh, and I'm Terry.
And this week we're talking about 2007's Diary of the Dead. The title of this episode is There's Always an Audience for Horror, which is true. And the tagline for this movie is Where Will You Be When the End Begins? So as we mentioned in our last episode for Land of the Dead, these movies are not chronologically the same as they are in the universe. So although this movie came out in 2007, it actually takes place on the same day as Night of Living Dead, which came out in 1968. But it takes place in 2007. So it's a little confusing, but just remember when you watch this one, it's taking place on the same day as Night of Living Dead. So it's the announcement of the apocalypse is happening here. So this was written and directed by our hero, the maestro, George A. Romero. And this movie has a keep your ears perked up while watching this movie because it has a ton of voiceover cameos, including Tarantino, Savini, Craven, King, Pegg, and Del Toro. So
just a few horror dignitaries and friends of Romero. So just like, hey, homie, we want to come like be on my film, but you're going to be a voice, like, great. Yeah. All these Easter eggs. So it's a lot of fun. This was great. We watched this one together. So thank you, Julia, for being there and being like, this is so-and-so. She was like calling him out. You knew him as soon as you heard him. I was just like, oh my God, you're such a queen.
my ears are quite keen for this.
They were ready.
Thing.
Yeah.
So we open up, this is just like right into it, where we have this news footage where, you know, this is the day. So nobody knows what's happening. And there was a murder-suicide in an apartment block and the bodies come back to life and they're getting it on camera on the news. But they figure out to shoot him in the head pretty quick.
Yeah, they do. But also you also see the news cover up very quickly, too.
Sure.
And then you see the propaganda machine in full effect right away, trying to mollify the people, trying to make it less scary than it actually is, trying to, you know, make people feel like, oh, no, it's not that bad out here. We wouldn't call them whatever. Like, this is a isolated incident, even though this is happening literally simultaneously around the world at the same time. And so people are on the internet loading up, I think it's MySpace or something at this point or something like that, are loading up stuff onto like all these different internet sites and trying to share these videos, but things are getting censored very quickly.
Right.
So we're getting right away.
So you're getting, you know, citizens who are trying to show you what's really happening. And then you have the media trying to gloss over what's really happening as it happens in real life. So they say that this is the death of death. Is what this is, which is, I think, quite poetic. So I think this film is cool because what we're actually watching is the film that the characters made themselves. So they are having, so most of this movie is handheld video camera, which if you get that dizzy feeling from it, maybe not the film for you.
Mama Terry is, ooh, that was tough for me. I get so motion sick whenever I watch anything like this. So I was like, oh no, the first 10 minutes. But what it's kind of settled, what settled in once we got a little further in and along, I was like, okay, I'll be all right.
I think it's really cool.
Blair Witchy in that way.
A film within a film where you have, you know, these characters made this film and then edited it themselves and now have uploaded it for you to watch to see their experience of the zombie apocalypse. So this is, you know, a found footage-esque kind of version of the zombie movie, which, you know, was quite big in this time and I think was cool to, because George Romero isn't afraid to change it up, you know, and this is like a kind of a different kind of film for him and I like that he experimented with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's just another level of like, how else can we scare people oh, make it real and put the cameras in their hands. Okay, done.
Yeah.
Ready to do that. And I love that they're also making a film at the beginning of the movie. So that's how they end up with these cameras. So we see this. So these kids are out. University of Pittsburgh, wah, wah, wink, wink, nod, nod, always. are making a film. It's a mummy movie. And so they're out in the woods, like, you know, shooting this horror movie. But all of course, as soon as they're making a horror movie and then real life horror is happening, people are getting this information in varying degrees and levels and actually believing some of it or not. And the shoot basically gets shut down in the midst of the zombie apocalypse upon them.
And Tony, who's one of their friends who's dressed up as the mummy, was like, well, I have this big ass house that's a fucking fortress. So I'm just going to go there. Is anybody in? And only one girl's like, yeah. I'm like, what are you guys doing? He just told you he had a fortress. Go with him. This is the fortress guy. They didn't. But he goes off with a girl, and the guys, well, fucking mummies get all the girls. not terribly sexy mummies, but I appreciate that. But you know,
but this guy was a hot mummy though.
Yeah, because you wrap it tight enough and you got that bod underneath and you're like, ah, well, it's not so bad, right? It's not so
Well, he was also a rich mummy. So I think that's the difference in this situation here, too. So he's the guy who's got all the resources and the money and all this stuff. So he's going to go to the fortress. So I'm sure it'll be fine there, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But so Jason, who is the guy who is making the film, has to go back to the dorms to find his girlfriend before he can go anywhere. And of course, the dorms are just deserted and everything is not good, but he does find her and she's fine. And they're going to get into a Winnebago and basically take everybody in this small group of friends home to wherever their homes may be.
Yeah, because everyone basically has mass exited so that they can go to, their friends and family and just make sure everybody's safe as things are changing very rapidly. They're hoping to go home and find their families okay, but who knows at this point what they're going to find.
And it's too bad they don't have the Dead Reckoning because this, you know, it's just a little Winnebago. You're like, you need a monster truck is what you need.
But then we get the chronology again, too. At the beginning of Apocalypse, it's like, oh, we don't have a decked out vehicle just yet. Do you know what I mean, though? Mm-hmm. Like, we haven't figured out that we need, like, literally a tank.
Maybe I need to start working on that now to be prepared for whatever eventuality comes on.
Yeah, I think so. I think we need to work on our cars now. Okay, good idea. Good call. We got to figure out how to make that gas out of, like, corn and stuff, too. Like, we got to figure that out as well. Okay. Like, out of some other resources. Okay.
So we end up having this. The first situation that they actually come into where they run into zombies is a state trooper who is just a big mess. And Mary, who is the girl who is driving, ends up running them over. But fine, like she should, right? Like they're zombies, they're coming to attack you. You know, once they've become zombies, they're kind of okay to run over. But she is so traumatized by it that she shoots herself. And so now they need...
Because she's like very Catholic. We realize she's very religious and she's just like basically, okay, this is the end of the world. I've already murdered. Like that's the unforgivable sin to her. She's just like, I can't continue on like this. And this is like, it's only going to get worse because she can feel it from here. So she was done.
So they try to, the rest of the group of the friends try to take her to the hospital now. So they have to take this detour to the hospital, which they know, of course, is not. So there's nobody in the hospital. Like the hospital is absolutely deserted, nobody there. So now they have, you know, pretty scary. You have zombie hospital. That's, you know, because that's not fun.
You don't want to go in a hospital and it's all deserted and then maybe there's zombies. Because as we've learned, and I think all these movie zombie things, if something looks deserted and you're in a zombie apocalypse, it's probably not.
Yeah.
So you need to be careful.
Why are abandoned hospitals so scary?
Because so many people have died in them. So it inherently feels like there's going to be some sort of ghost element or like it's a place of transition. So I think that's just part of it. They also are sterile and austere. And so there's nothing warm in them. Do you know what I mean, though? So you go in there and it's like a cold place where a lot of people have probably died.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. So we haven't actually mentioned that one of the group of the friends I was particularly enamored with, Elliot, who, very cute boy, glasses and Converse. And I'm like, oh, hi. Oh, hi.
All of Julia's favorite things.
Well, I mean, clearly, but you know, when you have the cute dorky guy with glasses, you're like, oh, sir, you're just zombie fodder. But I will ogle you until then.
Till your death, to the death. Yeah.
So they actually find a second camera in the hospital. So now they're able to have two angles. That would be the word I was looking for. Angles.
Yeah.
They find a zombie nurse and a zombie doctor. One of them like their brain, like they get shot and like the brains start leaking through their eye, but they're like
still the eyeballs coming. They get squeezed out of their eyeballs.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, mwah, mwah, maestro, maestro. I was like, this is what I am here for. Guts out of eyeballs. Yum. So good. This was probably my favorite little moment too, as far as like, oh, I was like, this movie I am in now. Like, this is gross. And it was great. Cause then we also get like guts from one of the patients. We realized the doctors were helping that patient by eating his intestines from the table. And he's like, you know, resuscitates because, you know, he's a zombie now and he's doesn't need his guts to live. He's just walking around like a dead gross zombie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we have a little standoff here and some tension.
So they of course, things go wrong. One of their friends gets bit, but they end up going out to bury Mary because she dies while she's in the hospital. They, you know, they got to put him down. And so it's this, you know, one of the there's a couple in here. And of course, the male half of the couple gets bit and the female half of the couple has to shoot him when he comes back to life. Which is going to do some damage mentally shooting.
Yeah, you. She's not okay. But even though she's like Texas tough, she's like, I know how to shoot. I'm okay. I can do all these things. And they're like, you know, they're a very sweet, like opposites attract kind of couple and stuff too. Mm-hmm. TNT. I think they both had last names of T, which is adorbs.
It is.
I was like, oh no, TNT explosive couple.
So then this movie takes a bit of a sharp left here, which I was perplexed slash delighted by, where we run into a deaf Amish fellow who is going to help them because they are running out of gas. Is that right?
Yeah, I think they were running out of gas or some. There was
a car broke down.
The car broke down and they needed it.
Texas tough girl's going to fix it.
Yeah, because she knows how to fix a leak in the fuel line or whatever it was. She's like, I have to see if it's a leak or if this type of thing on the fuel line. She's like, yeah, I know how to fix things. I'm Texas tough. I can do it. So, you know, she gets under the car. They're trying to fix the RV down this country road. And yeah, they meet Samuel. He's a deaf Amish gentleman. And he writes on his little chalkboard to them. But he's like, hey, we're like kind of surrounded here. Got to get the truck in the barn really quickly. So they do. But of course, the zombies that they don't know right now are actually kind of circling that place. And so they're going to end up having a standoff as they try to like secure the perimeter of the barn. And
well, I think this goes back to, I think what we were talking about in Train to Busan as well, where you're in this zombie apocalypse. And the question is, do you help yourself or do you help others? And honestly, in most zombie movies, helping others will get you killed. So yep. It is, and I think that a lot of these characters know that you are taking this risk that you're probably going to die. And so I, you know, it feels quite selfish to just have self-preservation, but I think that's such a normal human instinct. So you have this kind of back and forth of what people's views of the apocalypse and how they want to go out, I guess.
Absolutely. Like, I also think it's one of those things where it's like, where's your breaking point too? It's like, okay, how willing am I to try to survive in this? Like, what is my sense of will and determination? And then also, yeah, for the greater good, like if I can like pass this on and like help someone else escape or help this group of people that clearly love each other, you know, I'm alone here on this farm, whatever it is, like who knows what happened to the rest of this guy's family.
It would be rough to be deaf in a zombie apocalypse as well. Like you can't hear him coming. That's going to be a problem. And of course, Samuel, for all of his good-hearted, kind help is killed by zombies.
For so, sure. As the barn is surrounded, but he helps get them out of there. Mm-hmm. But we also see these. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was going to talk about the video of the birthday party the clip. Yes. So this whole movie is a lot of media, obviously, because they're making a movie with like the found footage and there's stuff that they have. But there's also this footage that they're seeing as they have signal here and there from news and from the internet of like different videos that have uploaded. And they see this crazy birthday party where the clown was clearly a zombie, but the people didn't know it. And so all of a sudden the clown just like attacks everybody at the birthday party and like eats the dad's face off and like, which is just delightful. But yeah, it's crazy just to see like different moments and montages of people turning along the way and like, oh, okay, this is how rampant it was and how bad it was. And again, the media kept trying to cover it up, but then everyone is finding all these videos on the internet this whole time.
Who doesn't love a clown zombie? I mean, that's pretty two things that are awesome together.
Right.
So they get the van fixed, but they are straight from the frying pan into the fire because now they run into a hardcore vigilante kind of group who are organized lickety split with weapons, and they're like, we were National Guard, but now nobody's coming to save you, so now we're just doing our own thing. So you're like, okay, this is not good. But they said that they have the power.
Right. And this is where we get our cameo from our guy. This is our guy Brubaker from our last film as well, who was leading this group of people. And if we realize that, oh, they actually really were not like, they're not official army, as we talked about before. Like, this is like vigilantes in army gear. Yes. So people think the army's coming to save them when they see these guys show up. And it's like, no. So sorry, guys. These guys have turned not into zombies, but they've turned into vigilantes, and they're going to literally steal all of your things and your resources.
Just come in.
They're trying to get the hell out of Dodge, too.
Yeah, just come in and steal everything. So it's cool because this movie, we see Colonel Brubaker here. This is happening simultaneously. Then we see him 3 years down the line in Land of the Dead. So I love that we get a little bit, you know, because I don't think he does that very much. So I think it's a fun little nod for the people who are paying attention. So they are in this horrible situation.
They end up to a compound. Yeah, they end up to a compound of like the military compound, though, too, right?
And trying to like edit and upload the footage as soon as possible. And it seems, I know it's important, but it seems to me like, you guys, just wait. Just don't do this right now. Like, I know how long fucking uploading things takes. Like, it's not the time.
And especially in 2007, it's different. Uploading speed is a little longer, you know, when you have to try to put up something on YouTube and it takes forever to render and like all that kind of good stuff. But people are learning how to survive during this whole thing. And they're talking with these guys. These are all these like black soldiers at this particular compound that they end up at. And they're like, yeah, I think it's, again, a commentary, as George has been so great at, is about like race and culture and stuff, too. Because these guys are like, whoever has the resources has the power. We are the black power, basically, now. And like, we have it. Mm-hmm. And so they have a standoff here, too, just about like who's going to get what, as the guys are like, uploading, though, they realize that somebody has died in the compound and has gone missing. So now they're locked up in this like compound with all these resources, but there's a zombie loose. So now they're all kind of on guard, but not everybody knows because the guys have hold themselves away to upload in a corner of this big building. So
there's a zombie hunt going on where everybody's going around and they think that they find it, but they actually kill the wrong guy. So that's never fun. But they do find the right guy, the zombie. And this is a fun kill. Kill him with acid. Just dump acid on his head and it eats away his brains. And I'm like, right on.
But he was also down a row. They're like, you can't shoot him right now. This is why they had to get creative about it, because he was next to all these barrels of gasoline that they had all those other resources in there. So it's like, you can't shoot somebody when you're near all that, or else you could have explosion of all of your resources. So yeah, acid works too. Yep.
Good to know. Just good to know. So it destroys his brain just fine. So now all of the networks on TV are going out. So they really only have the bloggers and the hackers and stuff to rely on to find out what's going on. And they say the more voices there are, the more spin there is. So, of course, you're going to get everybody's different opinions. So they end up getting out of there, getting to Deb's house, where they go in and, you know, is her family alive?
She really insisted, on getting there. But the alarm is on when they get there. And I was like, ooh, that doesn't look good, because their car is there, but the alarm is on in the house. So how was somebody able to get around in a house with an alarm on, unless you're a dead someone? And then I love this, too. They have the professor who was part of this college group as well. He's like this alcoholic professor who's just been drinking the whole time. And anytime they have a spot, he's getting his flask out. But he happened to grab at the last spot. They were like giving everybody weapons on Deb's insistence and making sure they got weapons to get the fuck out of there and some stuff to survive along the way. He grabbed a bow and arrow instead, because he's really good at archery, apparently. And this is going to come in very handy real swiftly with Deb's family, because, as we said, they are definitely not alive anymore.
So she has to watch her little brother get shot in the head with a bow and arrow and her mom and dad be zombies. So it's just not going to be good. So they end up, what are they going to do? Are they going to stay here in this house full of dead people? Or are they going to keep on going? And you're like, well, I guess you got to keep on going. So the next person they're going to go drop off is Ridley. But he's acting kind of weird.
Yeah, he's acting a little bit weird.
So they end up going to the compound, the fortress.
Yeah, the mummy, the mummy's house.
By the mummy at the beginning of this movie, and it looks great, right? Like this giant mansion, big gates. You seem like this is a pretty good way to hide out. And he's
when if everyone's still alive there, though. Again, always the question.
Sure. So they get there, and our mummy, acting real weird, real sus, and they find that he has, quote unquote, buried his mom and dad and the staff in his pool.
He said, well, he didn't say that at first. He just said, I buried them out back. And you're like,
or they're outside. They're out back.
Outside, out back. And he doesn't say specifically where. We find out later that he just threw them in a pool, which is not a burial, I guess, a water burial of sorts. But if they're going to come back and reanimate, that's probably not where you want to put them. Because as we learned before, at some point, they're going to figure out they can get out of water and stuff, too.
Yeah.
So it's a secret bunker, and he's got a paddock room, and the front of the room looks like the Tower of Terror. Everything always reminds me of Disney, dear God. But it looks like the front little room where you're like, oh, it's this beautiful mansion, but what terrors are in store, mm-hmm. you know, beyond this like little room.
I have to say, this is, in my opinion, where I would stay. Like, I understand we got some zombies in the backyard and mummy friend is acting strangely, but just get rid of those and just be there. Like, you have that.
Well, they had some supplies, but they've eaten. It looks like they've eaten through all the supplies at this point. It looks like he had too much. They didn't pace themselves. It looks like they were like gluttonous about it because they have like platters of food out and stuff that it looks like they were. He's like drunk. Like, it just looks like they just, you know, mm-hmm. either had a final feast or whatever, but didn't ration anything out. And he also seems like the kind of guy who doesn't actually know how to make anything. Like, he had servants to do all that, mm-hmm. but he's thus had to kill them since then. So I don't know. I'm still, yes, fortress, but yes, getting there earlier.
Yeah.
And yes, maybe rationing supplies and being smart about it, knowing that you might have to like get that stuff for a while. But at this point, I would probably want to hightail it out of there.
But Elliot, my sweetheart, in the meantime, we have, because we get some indoor camera footage, security camera footage for this, mm-hmm. for this movie. Elliot decides to take a bath, and I'm like, all right. Just take a bath, sir. But of course, aren't you quite vulnerable in the bath? Yes, you are. Are you going to get shot by a zombie? Sure are.
Did you just like put a blow dryer? I was like, oh, okay, Chekhov's gun. Like, all right, like, okay, like there's going to be like some sort of electrocution and a zombie situation. You set it all up. I was like, oh no, this is not going to go well for you.
No.
But yeah. And I was like, Elliot didn't lock the door. He left it all open. So it's like, okay, well, there you have it. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, that you know, and throughout this movie, we have Deb, Jason's girlfriend, challenging why he's filming. Like, he's not really helping. He's just kind of observing and like, what is it all for? And, you know, he says he wants to keep it for whoever comes after, that they know what happened. In this apocalypse. Now it's the time where everything's going to go totally pear-shaped and just everybody's going to get bitten by everybody. And you're like, oh, this is where it goes wrong.
The mummy actually is the one who starts turning it here for all of them because he's already kind of was at the end of his rope by the time they got there. And it was already like, you know, twanged. Mm-hmm. And I think he was on his way out. And then, you know, now he gets bit. So now he's going to bite his friends. And then it just goes on from there. And it's like a chain reaction of one after the other.
And Deb has to end up shooting Jason in the head. But she says she wants to finish his movie. Like, that's what she can do to honor his memory. Yeah. So now they're just going to hole up in the panic room for a while. And just, I don't, you know, see what happens. And just like, the movie is everything. So the last footage that we have of this movie is found footage from another place that they're watching, where you have two men who have strung up a female zombie by her hair from a tree and end up shooting her body off. So just her head is remaining, and they're kind of guffawing and laughing like this is a good time while they're doing it. So that's our last visual. And then Deb says, are we worth saving? You tell me. So you're like, oh, yeah, because people are human and people are awful and they're just going to do awful things.
Torturing and the zombies, you know, whether they can feel or not, we don't really know like what their brain space is. But it's like to do that to somebody and just leave them, you know, kind of sentient and still like gnarring on hanging from a tree. Pretty fucking awful.
And to be able to, you know, mm-hmm. it's you know, this movie takes place the day it happens, right? So it's like already people are doing this. This isn't 3 years later. This is like people the day of. They're like, well, fuck, let's have
some fun. They're already running to get that toilet paper. I get it. Like, it's a tough, tough day one, you know, and like people freak out. So it is that thing of like, you know, getting control of resources and all of that. So,
we always talk about how do you survive? And I think that staying on the run is okay, but I feel like holding up in a place is better. But you know, obviously you're going to run out of supplies eventually, so what do you do? Do you keep going, or do you stay in one place?
You got to figure out where your supply line is. And like, yeah. You know, eventually you're going to have to move, though. I think that's always the case in these times when, like, if you're not able to make everything or live off the land that you're ostensibly staying on, right? If you're not a homesteader, you're not like, you know, like I feel like the Amish guy, if he had not come across those people, probably had a good probably would have been okay.
Yeah.
Because he probably knows how to literally make everything without, you know, power, clearly, you know, and like could probably have been like a survivor in this instance. So very interesting. Just, you know, again, a character study of the human existence in general. Romero, thank you. Always, you know,
always.
And like, what does it mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are zombie movies, but they really are just taking this look at humanity and how we react to these kind of situations. And this movie in particular, skewering the media and how they spin everything and like what is truth and how do you get what's really happening, because everybody's take is different. This kind of Rashomon feeling of like you see the same event from different angles and it becomes this different thing.
Absolutely. And like constantly the question of who wants to survive in a world that's just like this, though, at this point.
Yeah.
It's like, what is that? What does it mean to survive in this place? So, yeah. So gore. Want me to do gore?
Please.
Factors. One, not enough blood to fill a Dixie cup. Two, a puddle of blood. Three, enough blood to gross out the average viewer. Four, a bathtub of blood. Five, run for the barf bag. As a true Romero film is, it's a five. We're going to run for that barf bag if we need it, because there's a lot of guts getting consumed. From people.
Yum. That's what we want from a zombie movie.
Yeah.
So movie ratings, 0 to 5 chainsaws. 1, if you're desperate. 2, barely qualifies as a horror film. 3, seen worse, seen better. 4, not too shabby. And 5, fantastic-orical. I gave this film a 3. I thought it was very interesting. And I really like the found footage thing. The fact that it's so meta and we're watching the movie that the characters are making. I really enjoyed that bit of it. And I think that it was a cool movie. What did you think, Ms. Campbell?
I also gave this film a 3 as well. Yeah, it's out of these newer Romero round or whatever, it's not my favorite one, but I did really like the tie-ins. Again, I think the payoff from the last movie and then also watching them all together was kind of like, okay,
yeah.
I like the through lines and stuff like that too. So I think it's definitely important in like, if you're a completist, as Julia and I are, and making sure you see all the things from our art tour here, the Maestro, I highly recommend just for those payoffs that are going to come out in the next one as well. So,
yes, the next movie we'll be talking about is 2009's Survival of the Dead. So we will keep on cruising in our George Romero round. Please do check out the George A. Romero Foundation. They are keeping George's legacy alive, and we love them. And you can find them on social media. You can also find us on social media. Where else can you find us, Terry?
You can find us on our Patreon. You can find us at our Teespring stores. You can find lots of fun ways to support. Check us out. We'll, you know, hang out with you, talk to you about more Romero all day if you want. We love it. I would highly recommend, also want to just plug Daniel Krause's book, The Living Dead, as well, that he finished posthumously along with George. It's a wonderful book. And I think in Companion, I'm so glad I read that. And then also watching these, I feel like I get more of like kind of like the big picture vision of what he was trying to get to. Because that book is really like the opus and it really ties all these stories together.
Definitely. We have an interview with Daniel Krause that you can check out where we delve into Living Dead, which is really fabulous. And if George had every budget in the world, this is the imagination of what this book is.
So that would have been the movie. That's like the epic. I call it like the Lord of the Rings, for like the Romero Lord of the Rings, like just like the epicness of it and like the like time and space that it takes. It's really beautiful. Anywho, we love you all. We'll see you next week for Survival of the Dead.
I hope you're ready for more Romero zombies and gnar-gnarring, because we sure are.
We'll gnar, 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 and chill. Gnar, 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 and chill. Okay, bye.